Hello and welcome to Anime Ashlight Podcast Top 5. The Top 5 this week is Top 5 Anime OSTs. I'm your host, Dave the Zombie. I'm joined with my co-host, Gabe.
Hello.
My other co-host, Lurks.
Hi.
We are joined with blog writer, Richard.
Hi.
And guest, Arrow.
Chef, unite!
And from Anime Instrumentality, Astroshaw.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for showing up.
Yep.
Thank you.
So let's get to
all right.
Number five. Let's first set it up to Astroshaw.
Number five. Mm-hmm. So pretty recent addition. Disappearance of Haru Suzumiya.
Oh, awesome.
Such good orchestration.
Yeah, I really like that.
It's
a lot more cinematic.
How they orchestrated the themes from the TV series. It's very familiar at the same time. Very new. That was great.
All right. Then let's move to Arrow.
So my number five, also a recent addition, is Madoka Magica OST.
You just checked out the volume two.
Yeah, right? I just got volume two, definitely. I really love the music in that. Like, it's funny because, like, whenever I listen to these songs, like, away from my computer, I can picture these scenes, like, exactly what's going on in the anime in my mind. And it's a really magical experience. There's only two downsides I have, which is probably the reason why it's top five, or only number five on my top five, no matter how much I love it. One, you can kind of notice there's a lot of repetition between the songs. Like, it's, like, for some of them, you can, like, the differences are pretty much, like, the tempo or the instruments used, but the melody is exactly the same, like, between a couple of them.
That's usually how it is in anime sound.
I mean, but it's really noticeable in this one, though.
Are you a fan of...
What's your question?
Are you a fan of Yuki Fajita in general?
Yes, I am.
Because her stuff tends to be pretty similar between our shows. Just in general.
Yeah, that whole Celtic music thing as well.
Right, that sort of really minor tonality.
Yeah, like, she doesn't really step out of the box in this one. But
exactly.
It's still really good. And especially, like, the action sequences, like, you can hear it. Like, the fight sequences, it's amazing. And also, like, I think this is an incomplete OST. Because, like, the second volume came out with, like, a more recent Blu-ray, which came out, like, a couple days ago. So if it seems like the songs are being released based on, like, the like which episodes have been released. So I'm expecting there should be a volume 3 coming out soon. But even then, like, it's still a good OST. It's a great OST.
Awesome.
How do you think it stacks up against her other stuff?
It depends, because usually, like, I don't like... So for her stuff, it's not usually the entire OST I like. There's usually just, like, a small grouping of songs. Like in Noir, for example... There's a lot of songs I like in that one. Like, I really like that jazzy feel. But there's other songs in that as well, especially the more slower paced ones I'm not really a big fan of. So it's kind of the same thing for this OST as well, is that there's a lot of songs that I just really love to listen to. But then, like, there's others where they're just completely underwhelming compared to her better songs.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
Alright, then let's move to Richard.
Okay, my number five is Toshio Matsuda from Mushishi. And I particularly really like what he did in Mushishi because it really fits well with the setting of Mushishi, where it's kind of set in kind of like isolated, open, kind of like a Japanese kind of like environment. And his kind of type of music kind of fits that ideal location, and you have like this very like natural kind of calm tone like music, like where he's kind of using like all these classical instruments, like more kind of Asian Eastern like music, and kind of, you know, it really gives you like really sense of like you could paint a picture or image when you listen to it, and it's one of the most calming and soothing soundtracks every year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he also did Naruto and Ghost Hunt, but I think Mushishi is probably his best one.
Alright. Then, let's move to Lurks.
Damn it!
Alright, you know, fuck this. Alright, so my number five goes to Bakemonogatari Guitar.
Nice.
I really enjoy listening to the soundtrack every now and then. I really enjoy a lot of the different songs and sounds that they have in this OST, especially like whenever any of the two characters are like having some sort of like dialogue with each other. There's this I cannot remember the song or what it's called, but like this jazzy piano song, and I swear, after I watched Bakemonogatari, that one song was stuck in my head for like the next month. It is so catchy and it's so good. I love it, and I love, you know, all the other different songs in Forest, especially the ED. I really enjoy that ED. I don't really ever like EDs all that much. So, I mean, this definitely made my list because of that.
You mean the ED, Kimi no Shiranai Monogatari?
Yeah.
The Supercell tune?
Yeah, I love Supercell.
Yeah, Supercell's amazing.
I think we actually use that as part of our, one of our outros.
I don't think we do.
Oh, no, yeah. We used to, yeah.
We used to.
Oh, that's well, right.
That was the old one.
Yeah, back in the day.
I'd like to make a quick nerdy side comment about Bakemonogatari's OST. There's actually a background track that's in 5/4 time. A very unusual sign, but time signature.
Yeah, it is.
Unusual time signature.
there's a lot of sophistication. And it's unfortunate, marred by really repetitive tracks, some of them. So, you know, all in all, decent OST, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Alright. Let's go to Gabe.
Okay. My number five, also from Shaft, is Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei by Tomoki Hasegawa. What?
There's so much Shaft love.
Well, I mean, I do like Bakemonogatari. It's very whimsical, and it's, you know, that kind of repetitive. That just kind of fits in with what's going on in the show. But, like, Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei, everything that goes on in that show is very, like, crazy. It's out of the place, all over the place. And then the soundtrack, it's very surreal, and it covers a lot of different kinds of genres. There's a lot of foreign influence in on it. But, like, it really, like, fits the mood. It changes the mood a lot. There's never really, like, one lingering you know, recurring theme among the songs except for the main theme, but that changes within each show. But like, it's just very it's very wide ranged of different kinds of tones and melodies, but it does fit the show very well. It does, because it's a very surreal show and it's a very surreal soundtrack. Really enjoyed it. So Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei.
Alright. It's my turn.
Yeah.
Alright. My number five is Cowboy Bebop's OST. And yeah, I love the opening.
Very cool.
It's very jazzy and.
Oh yeah.
Cowboy Bebop has like one of the most, I think, diverse soundtracks I've ever listened to. I think I've heard like rock and well, there's jazz and I'm not sure what other genres there was in, but it's all really catchy and it's each like almost every episode of I think has like a unique song to it. And, like I don't think any of the set tracks repeat themselves. But it's all interesting.
And, not really.
Yeah.
The I think the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack was very much expanded by the movie soundtrack. Cowboy Bebop focused a lot more on jazz, while the movie, was Knock on Heaven's Door, focused a lot more on rock.
I see.
And together they make a great combination.
Yeah, I think they do. I think it really flows well together. But that's my number five.
While we're on the topic, would you mind if I asked what you think of the recent, one sort of recent accusations of Yoko Kanno plagiarizing her background, her compositions. Do you know anything about that?
No, I haven't heard about that.
Have you seen the YouTube videos? They're pretty convincing.
What's the
Well, basically, there are some YouTube videos that superimposed, juxtaposed some of her more famous background tracks from her anime works and some more popular music from mainstream artists, and they're very, very similar. Ah. I don't know if you guys have seen that or not. Some of them are almost exact copies, like she transcribed the melody and just sort of rewrote it for her own ensemble.
Who was it again?
Who was the composer or the who made the videos? What do you mean?
The one who's accused of plagiarism.
Oh, Yoko Kanno.
I think I heard about it. I think Jork and like some other famous artists also like people compare music to that, and they think there's like similarities, and people are going back and forth about that.
Actually, with her, some people thought it was bad enough that they actually contacted the labels, which who she was supposedly plagiarizing from, but there was no real response. I don't know what came of that. Apparently, I just thought it was interesting to bring up.
All right, then.
Sorry to be down here.
That's all right. Let's move to turn number four. So let's hit it back up to you after Shaw.
Oh, back to me. My number four is Death Note.
Oh,
yeah.
I kind of expect that to be higher because I saw your review on it on your site.
Oh, did?
yeah, I did. Well,
my number, the top three are pretty big, heavy ones for me. But Death Note, you know, was almost known as much for its soundtrack as for was the actual show, if you ask me. There are two composers, Yoshihisa Hirano and another composer whose name escapes me, unfortunately.
Hideki Taniguchi.
Yeah, there you go. He did the soundtrack for Kaiji. And,
did it?
Two composers. Yeah, he did. And his style really comes out, but I think Kaiji was almost an appetizer for what he did for Death Note. The two composers come together so well in the different parts. You have the sort of spy thriller side in the Kaiji composer, whose name I already forgot, and Yoshihisa Hirano, who did the orchestration, the Latin chanting tracks, who actually has a Juilliard background. So graduated from the most prestigious music probably in the world. And it really shows. The orchestration, the way it was, the way it fits the show, the way it was executed, absolutely fantastic, if you ask me. I gave it a rating, actually, when I reviewed it. And it's one of my favorite OSTs ever. How you find a good OST, if you ask me, I'm sorry to keep talking like this. A good OST from a bad OST is how it stands on its own as music. Does it need to be propped up by the show, the knowledge of the show to be good music? And I don't think Death Note's OST really needs the show to be considered.
Yeah, that's my OST. Like when I do the anime OSTs on the site, like usually I pick out like from shows that where I can listen to it on its own and it still sounds incredible. And right. Death Note was one of the first ones that I picked up like, as soon as I watched the show, which was a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was great.
Mm-hmm. All right, then let's move to Arrow.
So, I'm sorry to have to start repeating, you know, animes already, but, my number four is actually Kemono Atari. Wow. And I absolutely love this OST. Like, and it's one of those where I can actually listen to without the show. So, like, the composer is Satoru Kosaki, and, like, he's actually really big. Did Bakemono Atari, Lucky Star, Ori Imo, like, he's done Haruhi Suzumiya series, like, he's done a lot of them. And to be honest, I actually think that Bakemono Atari is probably his best one. Like,
that's quite the statement.
It is a really bold statement, but it's like, it's one of those where like, just as Aftershock said, I can actually listen to it, you know, without the show. And that minimalist feel, like, it just, I don't know, it's just so appealing to me. It's just that like, it's the same note over and over and over, but I just can't help but get into it. Like, there's some of those songs, it's just like I have trouble pronouncing it's like Bake Roll or something like that. That's the one with like the that's the one with the red book scene in the actual anime. That song is amazing to listen to, and like there's just like it's just that he has that everyday it's like the everyday feel to it. Like he's really good doing slice of life music. But for some reason, it's Bakemonogatari Guitar is the, are the ones that I can actually listen to and like over and over and over. So yeah. That's why it's on my number four.
Okay.
Oh, and throw it out there, because we're also looking at OSTs, that show has consistently good OPs, including, and like, and it has a good ED as well. I love Supercell. But it's like, as far as like OPs and also done by the voice actresses themselves, that show's probably got like the best ones and the most consistent ones too. Like, the stable,
right?
Like, Shooter's Nightmare, Renai Circulation.
Holy crap.
That song is amazing. I don't know why, but it's so good. And like,
you don't need to know why. Just embrace it.
Yeah. Embrace all that kind of Hanazawa.
Yeah.
So that's why it's my number four.
All right, let's move to Richard.
My heart's beating for this one. Number four goes to Mugabe. It's from Samurai Champloo. And he's particularly one of my favorites because I listen to a lot of his music. It's kind of a tragic that he had to die. And Samurai Champloo was the only anime that had future. His music, and he does the beats for the soundtrack of Samurai Champloo for, I think it was Fat John, for the opening battle cry, and he did the beats for Shikinobu to the ending. And for a guy who respects so much indie and underground music, that he went to something that's so mainstream and managed to put his stuff out there, it's kind of like absurd. But then again, I felt like the music and the anime kind of combined each other. Like Samurai Champloo to it was like an image of the world to his eyes, to me, and it was just really, great.
Yeah.
This sort of is a collision of two entirely different things: this hip hop culture and this old style samurai sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I remember people saying Cowboy Bebop, and like what you said about the movies, like kind of rock, and like Samurai Champloo is like, I think what's the director of Samurai Champloo, Hoshi Da or something.
He was also the same director for Cowboy Bebop.
True that, and yeah.
Okay,
that's my number four.
Okay, let's move on over to Lex.
All right, my number four. OST will go to Clannad.
Really? That?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a really fantastic soundtrack, to be honest. I don't feel like it's one of those that kind of stands on its own too much, because whenever I listen to some of the songs like Nagisa, for example, I can't help but like want to go back and watch it with every like particular scene that song is in. Because it kind of adds to it more. Mm-hmm. Not to you.
Well, no. I'll talk about it when if we get to it. Excuse me, if we get to it.
Oh Lord! But anyways, it has some of my favorite like songs. I love the Dawn song. I particularly love. Listening to the second OP, which is, this is mean the opening for After Story. I can listen to that song on its own any time of the day. It's really great.
Yeah. Okay. Is that it? Is that all you got for
Yeah, pretty much. It's good OST. Some songs can stand on its own. Some that I feel like just needs like that scene to go with it, because it just adds to it. So.
Okay.
Alright. Let's move to Gabe.
Okay. This is number four, right? Okay. My number four is The Disappearance of Suzumiya Haruhi.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The soundtrack for Suzumiya Haruhi, the TV anime, I thought that was fantastic enough, but when the first thing you hear there's a movie coming out, from moving to a cinema, I thought that was great. But, they didn't just, move over the music. They did it over again. And they made it really feel very cinematic-like. And it gave it that movie feel. It didn't just sound like it had to be on TV anime. And some of the new songs he made, like, I can't really say the name because it's a spoiler, but like, they very much caught the suspense and almost like very scary tones throughout the movie. There's a lot of dramatic tones, melatonin stuff, kind of like that. But, you know, I thought they did a very good job with recreating the TV anime soundtrack and then adding new ones for the movie. I thought it was very good.
Have you heard the string concert of Haruhi Suzumiya?
Yes.
String concert they arranged for.
I did. Yeah. It was amazing.
Right.
What did you think? Huh?
How do you think it compares to that? I think it's more the same. Because everyone thought it was pretty similar. Was what some people were saying.
It had a pretty similar tone to it, but something about like disappearance, it gave more of that big cinematic, big screen kind of
thing. Right.
You know, both of them were they were excellent, but they both have their own kind of charm to it. The string organ show was very good. I did like it, but you know, the disappearance, just that, you know, it was very good. I can't really say anything more about it, but
fair enough.
Yeah. So that's my number four. All right, Dave, you're up next with your number four.
All right, my number four is Evangelion 2.0 OST. I think it's brilliantly conducted. Not to mention, introduced me to one of the songs that I really, really enjoyed. And I know it's not the original, but the cover of Tsubasa wo Kudasai. I know it's like an old children's song, but it's so well done. I mean, it's so well placed in that particular scene at the end. And like the other tracks too, The Beast and that song that plays when they're introducing the whole the new Tokyo and they're just making the setting. It's like, I could just listen to that all day. It's really good. Like some of the tracks seem so innocent, some of them seem so menacing at the same time. It really captures the feel of Evangelion, I feel. I guess that's all I have to say about it. And
go ahead.
I have a quick question. Do you kind of remember if any of the track names will spoil the anime for me? Because I've been wanting to listen to it, but I kind of feel like there's one of them that has
I think you're fine.
Yeah,
it's okay. Because I want to listen to it, but I can't watch the show.
I just want to bring up how interesting it was that they chose to as this the background music for the probably the most gruesome, most climactic scene was this children's chorus in this sort of Japanese folk song sort of thing. Does anyone have any opinions on that? There are people who thought it was totally inappropriate, and people who thought it was absolutely fantastic.
When the Evangelion goes berserk, is that?
There's the
game. There's actually two moments when that happens.
There are two.
We talked about this like on our on the first episode of Anime Movie Friday, where there's the moment where one of the Evangelions gets stabbed by the lance, and the other one where the Evangelion actually goes berserk.
I'm just gonna mute for a second.
And I think it fits well because it kind of has that, you know, strong sort of contrast between the situation and the music.
Mm-hmm.
I rather enjoyed it. I didn't see any sort of like, you know, dislike or I just didn't see any dislike with it.
Because those scenes could have been very cliche, you know, if they had this orchestra playing in the background, but instead it was almost even more emotional and probably more grotesque that they had these this high pitched, you know, children's vocals underlying this incredibly gruesome scene.
Yeah, I enjoyed that those parts quite a bit. It's just, but my only problem with it is that they did it twice.
Just saying.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, after it happens the first time and then it happens again, it really loses its effect. Like if they picked, like they could have done it once, but for either of those scenes, it would have worked perfectly. But it's the fact that they did it twice. Like, it's... Twice. Yeah.
They did it two different children's songs, which I think...
I mean, but the stark contrast in itself, like, that's what really gave the impact. And then, like, if you do it once, it's, like, it's just... Like, it throws their viewer off completely. But then you do it a second time, they're like, oh, yeah, that happened before. So it's not as emotionally impacting as it was the first time.
Almost like you expected. And as a sort of last comment from me as the music nerd here, one of the songs, The Aggressor, when Asuka is introduced as she destroys the angel in the first real battle scene, is actually in 7/4 time, the time signature. That was interesting.
Jeez.
No, sorry about that. That's okay.
Spoilers done? The spoiler's done?
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah,
7/4 time, man. Big spoiler.
I don't think that spoils anything. Oh, whatever.
Okay.
Let's move on to number 3. So let's head it back up to Aftershock.
Back to me. Number 3. Fooly Cooly. FXCL.
Oh.
Oh.
I don't know if I spoiled anyone else's list, but introduced me to one of my favorite bands of all time, The Pills.
Yeah.
A lot of but not a little bit, as an original soundtrack for not being an original soundtrack, they edited bits and clips from The Pillow's repertoire, and they used whole songs from it. And sometimes they had to edit out whole verses, and it just didn't flow right, the progressions. They removed entire bars. I believe Happy Bivouac, the track that's included on the OST, just had a couple bars removed from the outro. Awkward, but they had to do that to fit the title track. But, sorry, anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent. The way it fit the show's themes, this sort of this burgeoning adolescence, this kid turning into an adult as he grows up, so beautifully depicted. You almost never see this in American rock. This really clean, this with a good attitude, sort of this nostalgic, longing sort of tone. You almost never see that in American rock music, not mainstream anyway. The Pillows captured that really well, and I'm really glad that I was introduced to this band who has, probably dominated my playlist since then.
Yeah,
Pillows really good. Like the few songs, like what's it called, Carnival, and like the EP, was really, really good when you first hear it, especially even on screen, but more so even off screen. It's still really great.
The ED, Right on Shooting Star, that was, I believe, the only song that was actually composed by The Pillows for the show.
Yeah.
Now, also, that single, the Right on Shooting Star, that single was also the only single released in the U.S.
Oh. I mean, I did see, I saw like a CD single in FYE, but I didn't see anything else except for that one. Cool.
All right, that's
another theory. All right, then let's move to Arrow.
So I'm gonna be a real big jerk. Can I jump now?
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna dive head first. I'm really sorry. So I'm actually gonna talk about my number 4, and I'm gonna move Bakemonogatari Guitar up to number 3. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
But anyways,
excuse. But my, just go.
Yeah. I did that. Yeah. But my number 4, still really good. I'm gonna have to go with Toradora.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
I'm going to go with Toradora. So Toradora is done by Yukikari Hashimoto. And she's done some interesting works. The EDs for Sayonara Zetsubou Sensei, like those really jazzy, feely ones. Those are, she does those. And that's where I first got introduced to her. But then after watching Toradora, like that music really stands out. And to be honest, I have a guilty pleasure when it comes to like synthesizers, but the way she implements it in this, it's never really distracting. And that's what I really enjoy about it, is the fact that it's got these little electronic elements into the songs, but it actually adds to the effect. It doesn't usually take away or detract from anything, especially the show itself.
Yeah.
So when the show's at its lighthearted moments and then these little synthesizer riffs come in, like, it adds to it, and I love that so much.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I just can't help but fall in love with it. But then, what really makes the song or the OST notable is the fact that some of those emotional songs are the ones that like really make Toradora.
Okay, I know what you're gonna say.
Go
ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
Go ahead.
So, there's just some of these songs, when they start cranking out the orchestras and the synthesizer stops, they are really moving songs. And it really adds to the effect. Or it even reminds me of like a lot of the moving, emotionally moving scenes in Toradora.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of drama to it. And like, it's really interesting of how sometimes some of these songs, they bring tears to my eyes just because I can remember those scenes so vividly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, your favorite track?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, favorite track.
I don't know the tracks by name.
I do.
To be honest.
I do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Is it the same as mine?
Well, what's yours?
Lost My Pieces?
Yes.
Yes.
Lost My Pieces. And, you know, I would say Falling That would be Amiiro Rando. God.
Yeah.
But Lost My Pieces, like, it starts out really soft. It has, like, the orgel or piano kind of thing to it. And then it breaks out into the big violin orchestra. It's mm-hmm. really great. I don't know how I would have felt about the scene if they didn't play something like that. You know, right. Probably, I'm just probably saying that because I know what the song's like, but I think that that particular song really fits, what they put out with the show. So.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
And just to throw it out there too, quick mention.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm really curious about where, Hashimoto is going with her career now. She's doing the music for Mayo Chiki and Marwaru Penguin Drum.
Oh god. What a contrast with Pink T-shirt.
Yeah.
I know. Like, that's, like, I have no idea what to, I have no idea how to think, but I'm still engaged. That's the curious thing is that, like, Mayo Chiki, guilty pleasure of the season, but that music is really weird, but you can't help but, like, notice it.
Yeah.
I've only been watching Maru, so I can't really talk.
Oh, Mayo Chiki, yeah, don't watch it when people are around. I mean, it's nothing, it's not as bad as, like, Rokubu.
Shut up.
That's just a calling for the police if you watch that show.
Okay.
Wonder how many FBI lists you get put on for downloading that.
So yeah, number 4, Toradora. Number 3, Bakemonogatari.
Okay.
All right. That's
fair enough, John.
Let's go to Richard.
Oh, number 3?
Yeah.
Okay, my number 3 goes to Suzumu Hirasawa for the music for Paprika. And he's a electro artist that did Paprika, and it's kind of like, his music kind of reminds me of Geno Yamashiragumi from Akira, where he kind of uses a choir kind of music and kind of mixes of electro and orchestra, like, kind of different types of things together. And some reason I wasn't really fond of it in the beginning, but I really got attached to it and used to it. And it kind of brings like this kind of mix of culture and kind of genre and style together. And it kind of opens new eyes and ears for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was the composer for that?
For Paprika?
Yeah.
Suzumu Hirasawa.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Is it the same composer as... I mean, it sounds like a lot like the Paranoid Agent's opening to me.
Yeah, he did Paranoid Agent.
Yeah, okay. So it's the same composer.
He did Paranoid Agent. I think he also did Berserk.
Yeah, he did Berserk.
Yeah, Sato Shikon. The Paranoid Agent and Paprika. Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
In peace, Satoshi.
Okay. And then let's move to the next.
Okay. My number 3 is going to go to the OST for Ghost. Have this OST. It is really awesome to listen to. Again, it's not. It's one of those OSTs that, you know, kind of has to be listened to with some of the scenes in order to, like, get the full effect. Although I will say that the opening for the second season for a second gig is the single, like, my single favorite opening of all time. It's a song called Rise by and forgive me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, I think it's Origa. It's such a great song. It uses a lot of synthesizers, and it feels very techno-y. But what I really like about it is, like, not only is the singer very, like, she has a really great voice, but she also, like, implements Russian and English both interchangeably, and it's really, really nice to listen to. So, I mean, that's probably the main reason why it's on this list, because of that one song. It's actually really awesome. So, yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, not to be that soundtrack is allegedly one of the more heavily that Yoko Kanno supposedly, allegedly, maybe plagiarized from.
Really? I don't
know if that colors your or that colors your perception of it somewhat. But you know, I thought it'd be, you know, interesting to note. Maybe not interesting. Maybe I just want to hear myself talk.
That's fine.
I like to hear you talk too.
Oh, thank you.
Hey. Hi. All right. We're
Gabe.
Not.
Gabe. We're Gabe.
I'm joking. God. I'm joking. God. All right. Save us. Okay. My number three would be Shiki by Takanashi Yasuharu. Shiki is very atmospheric. It does a very good job of creating that tone of horror and suspense and everything. Aside from that, he does very good dramatic pieces about the show when you're in the perspective of the Shiki or of the humans, even, you know, the conflicting opinions and what's good and evil and stuff like that. It really reflects the people, and it does a great job of, you know, covers all of its bases. It has very scary kinds of female chanting or whatever, and it has a lot of sound effects, as chip tune, all that good stuff. It's very atmospheric. It does a great job of setting the tone of horror. It's cheeky. Yeah, that's Shiki. It's my number three.
Alright. Alright, next two are going to be kind of awkward to say, but for a show that I don't care much about, my number three is Penny and Stocking soundtrack. And
there we go.
What the exception of, you know.
I was waiting for that.
I was almost expecting this.
Juice is just like woman moaning, but everything else is like D Rock City, I think. Or what other? Flyaway.
Yeah.
Flyaway.
Oh god, Flyaway.
I have that stuff on my iPod. It's really, really fun to listen to. And it's like so catchy. It's got like an upbeat techno sound. It's great. I don't know what else.
Flyaway sounded great in the show.
Yeah.
But when I listened to it on my computer, like, you know, the song itself, I think it made my ears bleed.
Yeah.
It's just too much pulsating. And like, oh man. I just didn't like it.
I see. Oh, it's my
One of my more favorite. One of my more favorite like genres is R&B, and I was actually quite surprised at how well they actually did that in the album. Like the ending song, it's like it's this really smooth R&B, and it's like I never expected from like, you know, some Japanese singers, but they did it really well. It has a very chill, laid back feel, but it's so engaging. It's so hard to explain the soundtrack. It's like a hodgepodge of just random nonsense and like a mix of genres. But like whenever, like for some of those things, it does really well. Especially that R&B song, the ending.
Talking about heaven. No heaven.
Yeah. Like heaven knows or something like that. I know. I don't have the track list on that. Yeah.
All right. And let's go to number twos. Let's head up back to Aftershock.
All right. For my number two, I'm going to head full circle back to Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, Just a little backstory about myself, I guess. I played saxophone for many, many years. And as a personal fan of jazz, I can say that Cowboy Bebop qualifies as not just a good soundtrack, not just good music, but it's actually good jazz. I don't think any soundtrack ever, pretty much in my opinion, has earned as much universal appeal, universal acclaim as the soundtrack to Cowboy Bebop, especially the opening tank. As a sort of side note, in my senior year of high school, I managed to convince my high school band director to play Tank in a concert in our jazz band.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't very good, but man, it was fun. The jazz as a genre is very universal. Jazz in Japanese is pretty much the same as the jazz in America, jazz in Canada, jazz anywhere else. Jazz is just jazz. And I think Yokohama really took advantage of that. And no matter who you are, you can speak Czech, French, you can speak Italian, this soundtrack will appeal to you if you like the music. And it's just good music in that way. And probably most important of all, it fit the show in the club.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Then let's go to Arrow.
Now I'm angry. Because my number two is also Cowboy Bebop. But I guess to back up Aftershock's point, though, is like, I guess what, I don't know, because like, I've heard a lot of yellow jazz before. Yellow jazz meaning like jazz done by the Japanese. And like, it's usually very good, but there is actually a noticeable difference between yellow jazz and American jazz. It's like, I guess part of their culture is that since, you know, they're known to be very strict and like, you know, they have conservative, yeah, to that core. Like, you actually hear it in the music where like, sometimes they don't do as much freestyling where it's like, it seems like the notes they're trying to hit are trying to be perfect and like the timing is perfect. Like, it doesn't really fit usually the free flow nature that you hear in Western jazz. But in Cowboy Bebop, on the other hand, maybe it's because it's a Western show. Like, that's how I thought of the jazz. Like, I thought it was like, oh, you know, like this is like Western. It's more like Western jazz than it is yellow jazz. And I absolutely fell in love with it. Like, just like Aftershock has said as well. Like, Tank, you can't go wrong with that song at all. And then you have that, jazz, but then like it also has a bit of Western, but not continental Western, but more like, not like geographical Western, but more like, you know, the American Western, like in the actual Cowboys and Indians. It's got
the old West. Well.
Yes. Thank you. It's got that feel as well. Like there's some songs that has like harmonica playing and like you,
right. Like, right, right.
Like for a show that's oriented for the West, like Aftershock is right. This OST fits it like a glove. But Aftershock kind of ruined it for me because he talked about it already. So
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Gabe, you just got bumped up.
What?
You got bumped up quite a bit.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I was scared. But...
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I don't know.
So did you ever play a cover of a Cowboy Bebop song?
No, I can't play instruments for shit. I'll listen to the hell out of music, but I have no musical talent. Or actually, I don't even have music theory.
Everyone's got musical talent.
You have a tap your foot?
That's just something I think everybody has innately. No one's better at music than anyone else, if you ask me.
Well, I'm black, so I guess I can dance a bit better than you guys can. I have natural rhythm.
Are you kidding me? Black people invented jazz.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know any instruments, so I can't necessarily say.
Are the Renaissance?
Okay. Blue jeans, man.
Blue jeans.
And I'm talking about your pants.
Or is it? I am black.
Jeans.
Okay. Let's move on.
Oh my god, I asked Yoko Kano for a Cowboy Bebop.
Really? Damn. Three in a row.
You guys must have wanted to say it, but I'm just going to say the same thing. I really love the blues and the jazz. It does feel like a glove. And I also love the elements of like, kind of like, where it kind of plays around with the noir of Cowboy Bebop and kind of like
No, I really do love the blues and jazz music. Still learning about it in college. But yeah, I love it.
Do you prefer any style of jazz over another? Or is it just, because there are so many kinds.
Oh, definitely.
I don't think there's any other genre that has many permutations and splinter groups as jazz does. It's almost the popular aesthetic in jazz is to go against everything that came before you. That's always been the driving force behind jazz. And for that reason, if you have five different people, fans of jazz, they like five different kinds of jazz. And I don't think you'll find that in any other genre.
On that, I think it's, I don't know, I probably wasn't listening, but maybe somebody's already said it, but like.
I don't know what kind of jazz person I am. I mean, I kind of started out kind of listening to multiple music. Like, I was a ska and reggae kind of big fan, but I kind of done the history of those, and it kind of has jazz and live in their roots, like ska and some reggae and stuff like that. And like, I'm still kind of like, I'm still in my infancy of kind of studying jazz and listening to it, so I don't really know much about it. Okay. And I kind of, you know, read a little bit of Harlem Renaissance and stuff like that. Kind of an invention of jazz.
I got you. Now, for a show that's called Cowboy Bebop, the soundtrack had no bebop.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Like,
oh, really? No,
the subgenre of jazz is bebop.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's move to lyrics.
All right, so my number two goes to an original soundtrack from a show that I'm not a big fan of, but goddamn, this soundtrack is one of the best soundtracks I've ever heard. It goes to Death Note.
Damn,
that's definitely a soundtrack that can stand on its own. I could listen to. I mean, I love. What is the name of that? It starts with a K. I can't think of, like, how to...
Kyrie?
Yeah, Kyrie. That is such a great song. And I love listening to Light's theme and L's theme. There's a lot of just fantastic songs that just stood out the most from, like, just different scenes in Death Note. Like, even in some scenes, I would be, like, you know, I'd be trying to pay attention to, like, what's going on. But I would kind of be distracted a little bit by the music just because of how great it was to listen to. I was just taken aback by just how good the music was in the original soundtrack. And, you know, that's why it makes my number two. It's really damn good.
Which side do you prefer? The rock, the I forgot his name again.
Tanahashi
side or Yoshi's Hidden side?
Probably the other. I kind of like
the orchestra.
I mean, I like the rock and everything, but you know, sometimes I prefer like more of the orchestral. Yeah, orchestral sort of lyrical pieces.
So you're on Hirano's side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
I think that's probably because I was. I did music for 10 years, so.
What do you mean? As a profession?
No, I mean, throughout, like, high school and, like, my first year in college, I did music. And
The thing about Death Note soundtrack, I'm sorry to take over this again, but there's this underlying complexity that you just don't notice at first. It's like an L scene that,
Yeah,
I don't want to sing it, but it's so very complex. But as you listen to it, you don't really notice it. You just notice that something's just a little bit off. The time signature, I bring this up again, is something like 2716. There's 2716
in
every bar. When you listen to it, you don't really notice.
Damn.
And I mentioned this in my review of Death Note.
Yeah, but, I saw
it. Yeah, okay. Well, but the way it mirrors L's personality. Because L, you don't really know what's going on in his head. But you know he has a certain method to his madness. You know that in the end he'll get to the right result. You don't really know what's going on. And you don't really notice that how messed up he actually is until you really look at him. And the way the song mirrors that, the way his theme the song that was written for him so perfectly mirrors the way his character was written is very impressive.
Yeah, definitely. Dave?
Okay, let's move to Gabe.
Okay, I guess I'm going to do this again. Like, it's kind of been the same thing for everyone, but my number two is also Death Note. I don't think I can really say much, anything different than what other people have already said, but, you know, I guess I would say I'm on Hirano's side, the big in Latin orchestra, I mean, the big orchestral kind of music, and then they have the vocals in Latin, everything like that. The big kind of expressing how incredible that light is as Kira. It's really, it does a really good job about just putting him on a pedestal and exaggerating his character as Kira. But, you know, Taniguchi, when Taniguchi and Hirano work together, they get this kind of mix, which is in like the, I think it's like the first act of the OST, like when they work together on all the tracks, it has like elements of both, but then when they veer off on their own, Taniguchi, his songs, you know, they're more atmospheric about the, like you said, Aftershock, the detective kind of thing, the rock, and then Hirano likes to focus more on the incredible orchestral kind of stuff. So it has a very wide variety, and I think it does incredibly well on its own. So my number two.
Now you said the Taniguchi and Hirano, they collaborated on some tracks?
The first OST, like it's split into three. One, right. You could see the artist name is both of them, but in like the second one, it's like the songs are just Hirano or just Hideki, but in the first one, it's both of them. So I think there was some collab work, but I'm not too sure, but I think it was.
All right. My number two is Gurren Lagann's soundtrack. And all I can say is that soundtrack's like really empowering. And I just love the rock and roll. It's like, I know, like, Real Life Fight the Power has like love hate with its audience, but it has like opera and rock. And it just works so well. And, this is really nice to listen to.
The opening is like one of the strongest parts about this, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Power.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go to our number ones. We're gonna go back to Aftershock.
Already? All right. Number one. It's one of the more underrated soundtracks I think of all time. It's Haibane Ren soundtrack.
What is it again? I think you cut out.
Haibane Renmei.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
The show at all? No?
I heard of it.
It sounds familiar, but I don't know what it's about.
It's one of the angels. Right. Oh, man. I really wish I could remember the director. Something Abe. God.
It's just so many. Same people who did Serial Expander Slain, right?
Right. Yoshitoshi Abe. That was right. Yoshitoshi Abe.
I think Ben would know, but he doesn't want to be in it.
the composer, Ko Otani. The composer for Shadow of the Colossus.
You turned some heads there.
Got some ooze out.
Possibly, actually, my favorite soundtrack of all time. Like the way it fit the show. It seems like the OST was almost written before the show was even considered to be created. The show is fantastic in itself, but the music. It not only enhances the show, it seems like the show enhances the music. The way it was written, the dreaminess, the feeling of this old town in the middle of nowhere, and no one knows who they got there, how they got there, these characters who don't know who they are, what's going to happen to them, the way it captures that feeling, I think no other soundtrack has affected me as emotionally as the soundtrack to Haibane Renmei. Right. You guys should check it out if you haven't. Great show. It recently came out on Blu-ray.
Oh, okay. Could you tell the name of it so I can
Look it up later, Chris?
Like, that show gives you, like, a subtle and sometimes isolation, that kind of loneliness feeling. and that soundtrack kind of brings it out, I guess.
Mm-hmm. The if you'll notice, Kawatani stuff tends to be pretty similar, but man, he's sort of like what's her name? Oh my goodness, I cannot remember names today. The in that they do one thing very, very well, but he just hit it out of the ballpark on this one. And it's because he hasn't done very many anime OSTs, but man, has he left his mark?
I guess I'll check it out later.
Sounds good. Yeah,
I feel bad for not knowing this.
It's an 8-year-old anime.
But 8-year-old anime.
Well, yeah, man, I mean,
produced in a widescreen in HD, very ahead of its time.
Check that out. All right. That's all you got for your number one. Then we're going to move over to
Arrow. Yeah. So mine is a very unusual one, and sort of. I did Fooly Cooly. That's my number one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really unusual. It's still a good soundtrack, even if you look at Outside the Pillows, like outside the songs that the Pillows did. Like, it's really punk, in your face, totally rebellious, which definitely goes with the anime. Like, it's all about this little cynical, like, elementary school kid. But, like, even then, like, I guess the reason why it's so, like, emotional for me is the fact that, like, when I watched that show, that was when I was also going through my awkward years.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. like, it's just, so, like, you know, it really left a mark on, like, you know, like, how I watched anime, and just in general, like, how I, you know, grew up. Like, it's definitely not as, like, technically impressive as compared to, like, some of the soundtracks we've talked about, but it's just so emotional for me, just because of the fact that, like, it's definitely, like, in your face. It's definitely got that rock feel.
Yeah.
And I just can't help but, like, every time I listen to those songs, I just can't think about youth and, like, Revolution, not like, you know, not like a Roro Fight the Power kind of thing, but also not like a, you know, fuck the police type thing either. Like, it's just like, it's all about like change. And I just can't help but like listen to this music and just imagine just like all those guitars come out of foreheads.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I think, last time I mixed up a song instead of Carnival, it was Hybrid Rainbow. You guys know that
one? Yeah.
Yeah, I mixed up Hybrid Rainbow because, like, if it sounds like they're saying Carnival, and a long time ago I was having trouble which one was which, and I kind of stuck. But yeah, Hybrid Rainbow, really great, really great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely putting this in number one because of the sheer nostalgia factor for me. Like, of all the animes that we've talked about, this is probably one of the first ones. Like, as everything else I've seen, like in the past 1 or 2 years. But like Fooly Cooly was one of those I truly saw like when I was like growing up.
Yeah.
You know, the Pillows have always felt since the show, the popularity surged incredibly after the show was released. But they've always felt a bit shackled by the show. So whenever they meet a fan, chances are they're not necessarily a Pillows fan. They're a Fooly Cooly fan.
Yeah.
They love the music from the show, but they haven't heard anything else by them.
Yeah. They have a lot of albums.
They have almost 20 studio albums now.
Yeah.
One a year. They just
keep pumping.
They pump these out. Just, yeah.
Let's move on to Richard.
My number one goes to Yuki Kedra, and I don't know which to pick, but I'll go with Cardinal Kyokai.
Wow.
Like, to me, Cardinal Kyokai is like, to me, it's a really emotional anime, and like, it's kind of hard for me to understand, but just like, play things emotional to me, I need music to play my nerves, get those emotions, and I think Yuki Kedra, she's really skilled with violin and piano, and I think when I listen to her, like, soundtrack, I think Cardinal Kyokai is kind of one of her best solos of piano and all that stuff, and it really hits me really hard. It impacts me when I hear that during the movies.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to take this chance to plug the poster of the month articles on our blog, blog.nmainstreamtality.net. We did a Yukaijira article, 3,000 blogs. Took us forever. We worked real hard on these things. We'll check it out. We basically do a full biography and a, where we list all the work she's done, and then the editors do a little opinion piece on the composer.
Okay. Really cool.
End scene.
All right. Is that all you got, Redman?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's move down to Lurst.
Alrighty. My number one. I've actually been listening to my one OST this whole entire top five because I love it so much. And it's the OST to my favorite anime of all time. One of Alchemist Brotherhood's OST. This is one of the greatest original soundtracks to anything I've ever listened to. It is complete orchestral. The quality of the music feels like something I would go to like a professional city orchestra to listen to, but it's amazing that these, like, the time and effort put into all of these songs was made just for this anime. It's some of the most beautiful music I've ever listened to. It's, I mean, it's very hard to explain. You would have to like listen to it for yourself and just experience it. It's so beautiful.
I'm not gonna try and tell you that Alchemist Brotherhood soundtrack is good, but it's very good. I just think that what they did best was the action music for, you know, whatever song was battling with whatnot.
Oh yeah.
I think that the battle music was probably the strongest part about the soundtrack. The other themes and everything, like the Fullmetal Alchemist, the theme of the Alchemist, the Philosophorum.
Yeah, La Piece of Philosophorum is so good.
Yeah.
Holy Jesus.
You know, they're really good. I just don't think that they captured enough of, like, of Edward and Alphonse, you know, emotionally and everything. I still think they're very good, but it's like, it kind of just left me hanging. Like, I wish they would get to, like, some high point every now and then. Kind of didn't. I still think it was very good, but I think the strongest point is the battle scenes and everything, like Knives and Punishment. Is that what it's called? No, Knives and Shadows and Crime and Punishment and stuff like that. The action scenes were very, very well done, but you know, still very good all around.
Lyrics, you were talking about Brotherhood, correct?
Yeah, Brotherhood.
Okay. How do you think it compares to the actually original Full Metal Alchemist anime?
Yeah, I was about to ask that, yeah.
I would not know because I have not watched the original episode yet.
That's understandable.
I haven't gotten around to watching the original yet, but this is just another one of those original soundtracks that stands on its own. And I think there's three different volumes to this original soundtrack. I think I've listened to all of them more than once. They're fucking phenomenal. I mean, that's about as blunt as I can be. They're amazing.
All right. Let's now move down to me. My number one, you guys know me.
I already know what it is.
Yeah. You want to say it for me first?
It is the Clannad original soundtrack.
Yes, it's
Clannad.
I'll admit, like, you know, it's not so fantastic as, like, you know, Death Note and everything like that. Well, at least to me. But, like, what's the best thing about this OST? What I always say, like, you know, a good OST is something you can listen to on your own. But, like, with this one, the character attachment to the songs just works so incredibly well that I can't help but, you know, praise it for how well it does. Like Nagisa, that's her theme song. There's about like four different renditions of it. The original, it plays over and over and over throughout the series whenever you see her. But, you know, when, you know, stuff happens, they change the song around and everything. The Donga song has a very large attachment to me specifically, and then, you know, all the characters. It just makes me think back to the characters and what's happened in the show. You know, I just can't help but feel how incredibly well it's connected with what it's supposed to do. It does a very good job of what it's supposed to do. The OPs and EDs, the OP for After Story, I think, is probably the best one. The first one, a little iffy. The ED for the second one is okay. But, you know, all around, very good soundtrack, very good character attachment.
So. Can I ask you a question? For having never seen Clannad.
Well, okay, what's your reasoning on having not watched it? Like, well, you just never came across it, or you...
I did try to watch it, but that arc with the ghost girl with the wooden stars...
Fuko?
Yeah.
There's very mixed feelings, especially in this room. There's very mixed feelings about that arc. Like, there's two people who praise that to death, and then, you know...
That's so funny.
Lurks who thinks that Katomi's arc was the best, but, you know, I wouldn't blame you if you didn't find her arc better. But, like, by all means, if you can just get through it, like, do you really not like it, the her arc, or it's just a little hard to get through?
Let's see. How should I explain this?
I won't get mad.
I really couldn't stand that girl, Fuko. Really? Yeah. And I, at that point in the series, I couldn't see it going anywhere that I'd like. But apparently, you know, people heap praises upon the sequel, which I really wanted to see, but I had never seen the first one.
Okay. So, yeah. Dave, did you want to say something? I kind of heard you.
Oh, yeah. Did it bother you that they kept playing the happy second ED song? Like, even...
Oh, yes! It's terrible! Ending.
I did not. Okay, I don't want to say too much. Like, throughout the show, it fits, like, especially in one episode, because it kind of transitions into it, but then there's just one. It's horrible. Like,
okay, after
no ED. I would have said no ED.
Aftershock. Watching the ED actually ruins the experience. When you watch After Story, do not watch the ED. Like, stop right before it happens.
Really?
I'm not kidding. It's like...
Most of the show... There's
spoiler or...?
No. We're not going to say anything spoiler.
But okay. Just don't watch it.
There's a tone, you know, you're kind of getting into it, but then you're going to start noticing. You just don't play it. I'm not trying to...
Intriguing. You're just trying to get me to watch the show, aren't you?
Maybe.
I knew it. Okay.
Okay, so...
They're not lying, though, that, like, that ED is god-awful.
Well, it's not that bad, but...
No, it's bad. Real bad. It's,
like, even outside the show, I do not like that ED.
I like it.
I feel like it doesn't fit the theme of the show at all.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
Okay.
All right. Good advice.
All right. That's me for Clannad. Let's move it down to Dave.
I know what Dave's number one is.
I don't. What do you think it is? Please.
It's Bleakly.
Yeah, it's Bleakly.
Yeah! Yeah! You guys too well.
Wow. I love the soundtrack to Bleakly. I can't necessarily call myself like a Pills fan because I never really heard their other stuff, but what I've heard in Bleakly is really fun to watch, and I love Right on a Shooting Star. I love Fiddle Busters. I love what's that called? Crazy Sunshine. Oh, I love that. It's wild. It's
Crazy Sunshine. Yeah. That's a good one.
It's so well placed in the show too, because it's really lightens the mood and it gets you all riled up and it makes you want to watch another episode. It's really exciting music. And props to Pills for making it so much more better than that, Fleekly.
Now, if you ever want to get into the Pills more than you are now, I'll suggest an album. It's a little history behind the Pills is that the bassist is the one that found the band, Kenji Ueda. Now, Ueda, after leading the band for a few years, after I think a couple singles and an album, left the band. excuse me, a couple albums. He left the band. So he found the band. So, you know, that's not very common.
Yeah.
So they had about a 1 or 2 year hiatus, and then they made another album called Please Mr. Lost Man. That album is, I think, the masterpiece of their, released in 1999. I don't think they've ever topped that album. So if you want to ever get into the Pillows, you know, a bit more than where you are, where you're at now, I highly suggest that album.
Cool. What about their later
stuff? Mr. Lost Man. Excuse me?
What about their later stuff after
that? There's this period of the Pillows releasing their music called the Golden Age of the Pillows. It goes from Please Mr. Lost Man through, I think, their album Smile. Those 10 or so years of their music, not 10, like maybe 5 or 6, 5, 6, 7, is where you want to be. That Happy Bivouac, Runner's High, that group of albums is really golden. But lately, you know, they're getting near their 50s. They're starting to tone it down a little bit. Their songs are sounding a little bit less, you know, less sparkle, a bit more generic. It's still good stuff, but not where it used to be. Or not as consistently excellent.
Oh, I see.
What was that?
Lurks.
All right. Is that all you got on Folkly?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. Now that we're done with our top fives, is there anything that anyone wants to mention honorably? For honorable mentions,
I have 4 of them.
Right. I have 3.
All right, we're gonna go down person by person.
I have 1.
If you want to say anything, like keep it really short, or just you know say the track or whatever. So we'll go with Aftershock. You got any?
Yeah, I just got one. I want to mention real quick, which is the soundtrack to Akira. Akira, I guess.
Akira.
Let's say Akira. I'm sorry.
Akira.
Akira. I guess the Japanese person would say it that way. Well. The soundtrack itself, I'm not that big a fan of, but the way it introduced anime and the anime music to the rest of the world, it's one of the first soundtracks that really rivaled the productions coming out of Hollywood over in the U.S., especially on the animation side and also on the sound side. And I thought it deserved an honorable mention for that. It is such a landmark OST.
Let's go to Arrow.
Okay, I'll go real quick. 2 pieces, if you like orchestral stuff. Tatami Galaxy.
Yeah!
Yes.
Awesome.
No one mentioned that. I was kind of shocked. Tatami Galaxy.
Dude, that opening, man, that shit is awesome.
Yes.
It makes you feel like... All right, go ahead.
No. You. Tatami Galaxy. Tell me more.
I would just say that, like, every time I listened to that opening, I always felt like I was watching, like, a 90s sitcom. That's what it felt like to me. It was awesome. I love that shit. And that ED, oh, God, that ED is so good.
It is.
God, I can't believe I didn't think of that. Damn.
Jumping back. Oh, Tatami Galaxy, Kanon 2006, K-A-N-O-N 2006. Those are 2 really good orchestral pieces. Now, I'm going to do something a little different here. 2 bands that have done animes, and I think that everyone should start listening to. Supercell did the ending for Bakemonogatari.
Yep.
And School Food Punishment, who did School Food Punishment. They just released their latest album, Prog Roid, last week. I think it was last week they just released it.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal band. Like, it's got that electronica feel, mm-hmm. but it's... it's so hard to describe it. Everyone, pick those two up. Supercell.
They have a very unique sound.
Yeah, they do. Something I wish that was like more in the U.S.
I've known about Supercell, but I haven't heard about that.
School Food Punishment.
They did the ED to Eden of the East.
I haven't seen
Eden. They also did the ED to they did the ED to C.
To C, yeah. I love
that. Yeah, that's good shit.
Yeah, I reviewed that one, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. School Food Punishment and Supercell, definitely.
Okay, cool. Let's go to Richard. You got any honorable mention?
Yes, I would probably give an honorable mention to... I'll probably give it to Daniel Bashiru Gumi from Akira also, because I feel like that kind of sparked the kind of Satoshi Kon's kind of what his music wanted to be like from music workers with a mix of cultures and all that stuff, because I know they, there's things about like mixed culture, like they're kind of like a Bulgarian kind of choir and like African kind of twists and mixed cultures and all of that. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move over to Lurks.
All right, I got four of them I want to mention. One of them, which, you know, I had a hard time keeping this off my list. I eventually had. It was my best OST from 2010, Angel Beats.
Yeah.
I had a hard time keeping up, but I eventually had to just because I liked my top five. Also put Penny and Stocking on my honorable mentions for a lot of the same reasons Dave said. It's actually a really good OST. My other one goes to Elfin Lied. Yeah, it actually has a really good OST to it.
Yeah, the opening, or which one is
the it? Opening's really good, but the other thing about it is, like, the music box version of the opening, I actually like a lot better. If y'all can remember what that's like, but...
All right, we'll move down to me. I got, really, this is just all the ones that didn't make the top five, which is about, what, seven or something. I'm not going to talk too much about them. Naruto, that always stuck with me ever since I was little, because it was one of my, probably my first anime, probably, I don't know. Oh, not like my third, I don't know. But the OST always stuck with me. I thought it was very powerful and everything. Summer Wars, that was very well done. Madoka Magica.
Jeff,
yeah. Madoka Magica has that, like, Arabian influence to it a little bit, that Celtic kind of stuff in it. Code Geass, the battles are very, very well done. And the, dramatic songs are also incredible. Toradora, you know, everything that, who said? Was that you, Lurks?
Oh, that was me.
That was you, Harry? Yeah, I was thinking about you.
Yeah, you were.
Wait, I was thinking about that. Dude, yeah. Spice and Wolf's OST is like that completely foreign, something like around European instead of like the, you know, Japanese kind of music. Mm-hmm. It's all European.
Oh man, that OP of the first season.
Yeah.
Yes!
It's very
nice. So good.
I kind of prefer the second OP. I just like it better, but, you know, first OP is like also incredible. Now let's go down to Dave. You got any honorable mentions?
Just one. That is Bacano's soundtrack. I think the opening's really catchy. I love the jazzy feel to Bacano's soundtrack. I can't really name specific tracks, but it really fit the mood well. That's pretty much all I have to say.
Okay.
That and Cowboy Bebop, I think, are the two anime that carry the valiant torch of jazz. Yeah. The anime world. I can't believe I forgot that. I can't believe it.
Okay.
Well, next time.
Dave, you wanna do this?
Sure. This has been Anime Afterlife Podcast Top 5. Check out Anime Instrumentality. They have an excellent blog on anime music. Thank you, Aftershock, for being on our show. And
sure.
Thank you for listening.